Hey folks, Jovan Hutton Pulitzer here. How you doing? Happy 4th of July. I wonder, do you know who the great men were that signed our Declaration of Independence? Have you thought about it? You know, with my kids, one of the things I do is go around to cemeteries and read people's names out loud. Because why? Because people just don't get their name read after they're dead. Have you ever thought about who the great men were that signed our Declaration of Independence? Well, you know, that was about 245 years ago when the leaders of America's original 14 colonies got together in a hot room in Philadelphia and decided to break their ties with Britain. So on July 4th, 1776, the Continental Congress approved the text of the Declaration of Independence. But who were the men that signed it and what happened to them? It's an interesting story what happened to them after they affixed their names to a document that led to a revolution that actually started this nation. It's kind of what's going on now. You think about people putting their jobs and life on the line to try to save this great nation, and they're being called charlatans and conspirators and all kinds of things. Our country's been here before, but you know, the best well-known names, we kind of all know this, include like Benjamin Franklin, somebody in my family line, bloodline, Thomas Jefferson, and of course John Hancock. Now, if you were to look at their professions, do you know what these people's professions were? Do you actually know what they did? They're not much different than what all of us are, right? They were lawyers. They were doctors. They were politicians. They were farmers. They were planters. Most of them derived their income, of course, from agricultural work. But from the time that they did that document, stories have emerged as to what happened to them. And well, you need to know that they were punished. They were punished for rebelling against the crown, just as we're being censored and punished today. But unlike now, the communication methods back then didn't get you outed. It was a lot hard to be outed because back then, you know, in the 18th century, people could keep their identities sacred. We're going to be talking about that in this episode. And I want to bring to you the stories about the great man that signed the Declaration of Independence. I'm going to go through every one of them. I'm going to give you a little brief background on them, and I'm going to help you understand what happened, what they did for our great nation and its founding today on its birthday, 245 years later. There's that number, 45. And what it cost them. Many of them, it cost them dearly. Hang tight, share this. We'll be right back as we get started right after this.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
Your mind. It's that time again to yank your brain away from stinking thinking and wash it in new ideas and thoughts. It's time for your checkup from the neck up and maybe a massive mental enema. This yank is going to give your brain a crank, has been called a genius, since his patents are part of every mobile device made. Get ready for him to reach into your ears and massage that brain of yours. Your host, Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer.
Okay, folks, happy 4th of July. There were always, in every group, idiots in the crowd. Now, what do I say idiots in a crowd? You're going to find that even among the signers of the Declaration of Independence are idiots in the crowd. There are people that will always find the negative in everything and learn nothing. Then there are those that have open minds, try to go back and look at history and understand what it took. Saw an idiot a few minutes ago post about, wow, they were slave owners. How would you associate with that? Well, that's what CNN and other poison would like you to think. But if you actually pay attention, if you get that mental enema out of your brain and actually think about what's going on, you'll actually learn it might not be what you think it is. Now, it's very hard to talk to a closed mind. If a mind is permanently shut, it will never learn anything. And that's why I say you might need a mental enema. And I'll give you an example. Let's take Tracy Lincoln here. For the record, we were founded by a bunch of extremists who were willing to die for radical views. You're right. It's in our blood. And they will call us extremists. But you know what? Being extreme for liberty, true liberty, is not what I call being extreme at all. You know, you have to understand where we've been and where we come from to understand where we're going. The battle today is not guns and knives and weapons and on a field. The playing field is a 1/2-inch playing field. Did you know that? What is that 1/2-inch playing field? That's the battle right here. The half inch from the outside skin of your forehead into your brain. So let me tell you about the signers of our Declaration of Independence. For those of you that just think they were slave owners and that's all you want to talk about, you're probably not going to learn very much. This might not be for you. But these Americans put their lives on the line so all of us could be free. And here we are 245 years later, wondering if that freedom is going to stay. So I told you that back then it was easier to keep their identities secret. Today's battle, it's not. Even I've had to relocate my family just because I want election integrity. The world's watching. Look at Barry. Barry's in the UK. That's the way it is. This is something we all should be celebrating because the US does lead the way. So, you know, it was very difficult back then in those times when you think about it for a British troop to actually find out where these people lived or in what community or what they had, because there was truly a lack of communication. Today, modern Antifa, people on social media have no problem doxing people out. Now, these people that signed the Declaration of Independence were deemed treasonous. Now, taxation without representation, I think we could say we're almost there again, aren't we? Our laws aren't being enforced. What was right is wrong. What was wrong is right. Everything's upside down. Now, many were imprisoned and treated as high-value prisoners. Could you imagine in modern day Antifa getting a hold of somebody like Patrick Byrne or Mike Lindell? You know, there are guys out there beating a mom and her kids and stabbed her because she was protesting Trans men in a spa, a woman's spa, because he identified as a female, but walking around with his genitalia in front of her children. So she was protesting it. Antifa attacked her. That happened this weekend. A lot of these signers that set our country in motion enjoyed great wealth when it started. They were in their prime. Many died penniless. A few of them did emerge, should we say, to live long and happy lives. But who were these men and what happened to them after they signed the Declaration of Independence? Here's a short recap for you. Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured. Later on, they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. There's a lot of people out there that say, wow, they didn't really die in the war. The war was over. It was from wounds. And that's the people that want to do their best to minimize what these 56 great individuals did to set in motion the biggest revolution in the world, and that was people fighting and gaining their freedom. They signed, they pledged their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor. And at the time, people hated him for it. Until now, you see the great experiment that was worked. So what kind of men were they? Lawyers, like I said. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers, large plantation owners. I hate to sometimes say that word because some people only associate it with slavery. But that doesn't mean slavery plantation doesn't 100% mean slavery. They were men of means. They were well educated. But when they signed the direct Declaration of Independence, they well knew that the penalty would be death if they were captured. 17 lost everything their family owned. Everything their family owned. We're going to talk about some of these, like Carter Braxton of Virginia. He was a wealthy planter and trader. He saw his ship swept in the seas by the British Navy. He lost his home, everything to pay his debts. He died in rags. Thomas MacKinnon was so hounded by the British that he had to move his family almost constantly. I had to move my family just to be here today talking about election integrity. He served in Congress without pay, and his family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken from him. For signing the Declaration of Independence at the time, poverty was his reward. You know, vandals and soldiers, or both, actually, they looted the properties of the signers with last names Ellery, Clymer, Hull, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Middleton. In fact, at the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson Jr. quoted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson home for his headquarters. The owner quietly urged General Washington to open fire. And you know what? The home was destroyed. Nelson died in bankruptcy. Francis Lewis had his property destroyed. The enemies jailed his wife and did things to her that she died within a few months. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying for signing the Declaration of Independence. Their 13 children fled for their lives. His home, his grains, his mills were all laid to waste just for wanting to be independent because he could not accept taxation without representation. And for years, he lived in forest and caves, only to return home to find his wife dead and all 13 children vanished and unheard of. All 13. A few weeks later, he died. Some say of a broken heart. He was completely exhausted. Norris and Livingston served same fates. And these are the stories of, should we say, our founders of our country that signed the Declaration of Independence. They were not some wild-eyed, rabble-rousing ruffians. Ruffian comes from my family as well. Most of them were soft-spoken of means and education. And when I say soft-spoken men, I'm not talking about effeminate snowflakes. I'm talking about just learned men, and I'm certainly not talking elites. They were standing tall, towering above others, straight and tall, unwavering in their pledge. And what was their pledge? For the support of this declaration, with firm reliance on protection of the divine providence, we mutually agree to each other, our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. I'm going to go over these men's name, because many of these men's names have not been said in 200 years. And you're going to see an interesting trend emerge. A trend that is going to make you understand what it means to be a patriot, and a trend that's going to make you absolutely want to vomit when you understand where these seeds of seditious undermining of America come from. Do me a favor, will you? Will you just share this program right now during the break here? Call your friends, family, message them, do whatever you need to do, ask them to tune in, because they're probably going to hear things they have never heard before regarding the Declaration of Independence and the founding of our country right after this.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
So here's what most people don't know about these voting machines. All of them have variations, but let me ask you a question. Most of us have used a vending machine or, say, a car wash. We take out our dollar bill, we put it into the machine, but if the bill's bad, what happened? It spits it back out to you. So what do? You try to straighten out the bill or find another bill till you get one that works. Did you know in these so-called voting machines that when it takes that ballot in, if something's wrong with it, you don't get notified? It's actually set over into another electronic bin for somebody else to decide what did you intend to vote. I say these systems are not set up, should we say, for security. I think they're set up to maximize opportunity. And sometimes if you know how to use those opportunities, you can game the system. Let me give you an example. Let's say all of these 160 million votes were dollar bills. We'd have $160 million sitting out in front of us. As I said, it's all yours, absolutely guaranteed, $160 million. And you say, okay, I want to count it, but we only pull out a few bills and say, see these 10s, see these 20s. You can't see it all. You can only see a little bit. Are you going to believe that that's actually yours? Not at all. In all systems, whether it be you're going to do a public company or you're going to be audited by a bank,
They ask you and your accounts to look at everything down to the penny. Why don't we do this in our election systems? And it's because the auditing is set up not to find the truth. Let me give you an example. Follow with me here. If you look at my blocks that I've set out on the table, these represent boxes of ballots. Now, if you were dealing with a state, let's say like Georgia, you would have 2,300 locations of boxes with multiple boxes in every location. Now, each of these boxes in this scenario have ballots in them. And so let's say, okay, we're going to do a random audit. Let's look at a few percent of them. So you're going to look at them. Let's say we're going to take this one and let's take this one over here. And here you go. We're going to keep these over here. And we're taking almost all of them and we're going to do an audit. Here you go. And we run those and we never find anything. Do you know why that happens? It's because these boxes are coded. And if you look at the numbers on the outside, what I did in that little smoke and mirrors right there is I pulled the ones that are the odd numbers. These are the positive numbers. What I'm doing, if I'm gaming the system, I know I'm not going to find errors in the odd boxes. I will in the even boxes. And so what they do is they do this shell game of partial audits. And that's why every time it happens, you find out, well, one woman signed for her husband, and that's the only discrepancy we found. Partial audits do not work. That is how the system is rigged to never give an answer and to never find a solution.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
And you understand that the men that put their John Hancocks on the documents, they were possibly signing their death sentence. Today, it feels like the same. You could expect a lot of us that are involved in this directly. You can expect the government to come after us. Mike Lindell's had it, actually, his retail stop. But let's go on. I'm going to cover this by state. Some of these things, maybe you've heard, some of you hadn't, but I'm going to talk about these men. So let's start with Connecticut. The first one is Samuel Huntington. Well, he's born in 1731, died in 1796, so that basically make him 63 years old. He was a self-made man who had distinguished himself in the state and national levels. He was the president of Congress from 1779 to 1781, and he presided over the adoption of the Articles of Confederation in 1781. Another signer was Roger Sherman. Now, as I go, I'm going to add some facts here that might jump out at you. And then as I wrap up today, I'm going to share with you 10 things you probably didn't know about the Declaration of Independence. But in these very men's blood and seeds that they sowed to create our incredible republic, so did the seeds of dissension, a new type of dissension, undo our nation. Pay attention to the states. Roger Sherman, he was born in 1723. He died in 1793. Now, Roger was a member of the Committee of Five that was chosen to write the Declaration of Independence. So he's one of the original five authors, Declaration of Independence. He and Robert Morris were the only individuals to sign the Declaration of Independence, the Article of Confederation, and the Constitution. That's one of your Connecticut fellowmen. Then there was William Williams. 1731 to 1811. When he passed away, William Williams was a graduate of Harvard. He studied theology with his father and eventually became a successful merchant. Now, he fought in the French Indian War and returned to Lebanon, Connecticut, where he served for 44 years as the town clerk. He was elected to the Continental Congress from 1776 to 1777. And after signing, the Declaration of Independence, he was a member of the committee that was instrumental in framing the Articles of Confederation. Now, what's really interesting, when I say he was a graduate of Harvard, your mind probably goes, what the hell? Harvard? Are you kidding me? And see, that's right, Jack. That's when Harvard was reputable. Harvard now is the opposite of what the United States of America stands for. And this is the first instance I'm going to point it out to you, because from these great men came some of the greatest educational institutions in the world. And if you want to understand how we got here today, you will understand that the left insidiously infiltrated those organizations and over time moved them left. You're also going to find a common theme. See, back then, universities were church institutions. Most people don't know that. And then when it was the outcry, separation of church and state, right, became the joke. Because see, back then, yes, Jerry, Harvard was about Christ. Now Harvard, you know, is a parasite. I hate to say that, but it's true. Now Harvard stands for everything that's not American. And what you're going to find is the undoing of what we're dealing with today started in the very institution these men help start, fund, and found. And that's how this rot to get us here today began. And it started in the educational system, not government, educational system. Let's go on. We've got Oliver Wolcott. W-O-L-C-O-T-T. He was born in 1726, died in 1797. Now, Oliver Wolcott was as much a soldier as he was a politician. He served as Brigadier General in the New York campaigns from 1776 to 1777. As a Major General, he was involved in defending, you're going to love this, defending the Connecticut coast from attacks by the royal governor of New York. Wow. We're actually doing that today, too. We still have to try to defend ourselves from governors of New York. How ironic is that? The seat where all of this began is the same seat of D.C. even today. These cities, in many ways, have reverted back and rotted to the core and have become everything that stands for un-American. Oliver was having to fight against the governor of New York, about as traitorous as we have today. Let's go on to Delaware. From there, we have Thomas McKean. Thomas McKean was born in 1734, died in 1817. Thomas McKean was the last member of the Second Continental Congress to sign the Declaration of Independence. Then there was George Read. He was born in 1733. He died in 1798. George Read was the only signer of the Declaration of Independence who voted against the proposal for independence that was originally introduced by Richard Henry Lee of Virginia. Then there was Caesar Rodney. Now, Caesar was born in 1728. He passed away in 1784. Now, Caesar took a strong stand in favor of independence. And because he stood so strong for independence, Congress actually would, at the time, because so many people were afraid of doing what was right, the conservatives at the time that were pledging to the king didn't even elect him to Congress in Delaware. They were afraid of him because he was too courageous for them. They also blocked his election to the state legislature and his appointment to the state's constitutional convention, only because he took too strong of a favor in independence. Now let's go to Georgia, where we're fighting for our country once again. We're fighting for our country once again. For what these 56 people put their name on the line, and most of them lost it. For what all of us have enjoyed for 245 years that looks like it's being undone. But here's what Georgia did. Now, Georgia was Button Gwinnett. He was born in 1735. He died in 1776. And after the governor died in 1777, he died in 1777. After he died, the first governor, he served as a governor for like 2 months, right? It didn't achieve re-election. His life, though, was one of economic and political disappointment. Button Gwinnett was the second signer of the declaration to die. He died as the result of a duel outside Georgia, where men settled it with pistols. He lost, but at least he had the opportunity to do it. Then there was Lyman Hall from Georgia. Now, Lyman was one of the four signers that was a trained minister. He was a graduate of Princeton College. In his life, he also served as a doctor, governor, planter, and during the Revolutionary War, his property and home was destroyed and he was accused of treason. Princeton. Another place that used to stand for freedom, democracy, now puts out everything left it can. You're starting to see the trend. This started a long time ago, going to the very heartbeat of how we got our independence. There was George Walton from Georgia. He was born in 1741, died in 1804. George Walton was elected to the Continental Congress in 1976 and 1977 and 1980, and, or excuse me, 1776, 1777, 1780, and 1781. He was the first colonel of the Georgia militia. And in 1778, where he became the first militia after that, the Revolutionary War, he was captured by the British in 1778. But he was released in a year. He went on to found the Richmond Academy and the Franklin College, which you now know as the University of Georgia. Again, a place that has turned completely radical. Now let's jump over to Maryland. Maryland has Charles Carroll. He was born in 1737. He died in 1832. He almost made it to 100 years old, 95. Now, Charles Carroll was one of the wealthiest men in America at the time, and he was the oldest and the longest survivor that signed the Declaration of Independence. Then there was Samuel Chase of Maryland. He was born in 1741, died in 1811. Samuel Chase was known, how do you say it? Desmothines? Am I saying that right? He was considered the Desmothines of Maryland. It basically means a great orator and speaker. He was the only Supreme Court justice to be impeached. And what he got impeached for is he was charged with discriminating against the supporters of Thomas Jefferson, and he was found to be not guilty. Then there was William Packa. William Packa was elected to the Continental Congress from 1774 to 1778. He was also a planter and a lawyer, but he was a relatively minor figure in national affairs, meaning he was just a worker, and that's what he did. But he carried clout then and stepped up. He was a businessman, kind of like Mike Lindell, stepped up, not a politician, stepped up and did what it took to developed this great nation. Then there was Thomas Stone. Now, Thomas Stone was one of the most conservative of the signers, along with Carter Braxton of Virginia, George Reed of Delaware, and Edward Rutledge of South Carolina. He was chosen to be the delegate for the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, but he had to decline because he had poor health of his wife. His wife, unfortunately, she died not even a year later. He was grief-stricken. He died a few months later. Massachusetts, John Adams. Now, John Adams was the first vice president of the United States and the second president of the United States. He was a member of, along with Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Robert Livingston, and Roger Sherman, who was chosen to draft the Declaration of Independence. He was the first president to attend Harvard University, and he was the first to have a son become president. Obama went to Harvard and stands for everything un-American. And here's the first one that went to Harvard, signed the Declaration of Independence, went to Harvard, became a president, and fought for this country. Now coming out of Harvard means you want to undo this country. It's sad. Let's move on. Samuel Adams, not the beer, the man that the beer is named after. Samuel Adams was known as the firebrand of the Revolution. He was an agitator between the colonists and the British prior to the outbreak of hostilities on April in 1775. He was the one that went out, got in their faces, and stirred it up. He did what a lot of us need to do in the proper way, get out and stir it up. And I'm not talking the Antifa way, but ironically, they had their own Antifa at the time, too. Then there was Elbridge Gerry, and that's G-E-R-R-Y. He was born in 1774, died in 1814. By the way, Sam Adams was born in 1722, died in 1803. Now, Elbridge Gerry served for a time as a member of the state legislature of Massachusetts. He also attended meetings in Philadelphia for the new Constitution. And at the end, he was actually opposed to it. But he was opposed to it because it didn't have a Bill of Rights. You can have a constitution, but you need to be with it, the Bill of Rights. You need to actually have those rights that go with it. So he stood up for those rights. Now, they had to come in parts. He changed, had his change of heart, and eventually let it go through. Then we got to the Bill of Rights. He died, most people don't know this, but he was the vice president of James Madison. He died in 1814. John Hancock, putting your name on it. Putting your name on it, right? We call that our John Hancock. Why is that? Well, you know, John Hancock was the president of the Second Continental Congress when the Declaration of Independence was adopted. He, along with Samuel Adams, were the two most wanted men in the colonies, had bounties on their head. He, along with Sam Adams, kind of had to live for a while like outlaws because they were the two most wanted. King George III wanted their heads. Now, he served as a major general during the Revolutionary War, and John Hancock is one of the original fathers of the Declaration of Independence. Then there is Robert Treat Paine, born in 1731, passed in 1814. Now, Robert Treat Paine was elected to the Continental Congress in 1774 and 1776. Okay? Now, during this time, Paine concentrated primarily on military and Indian concerns, but he was kind of known as a naysayer, right? Naysayer. Why? It's because he kind of opposed everything out there. He was known as the Mr. Objection or Mr. Objection Maker, but he was the a smart fellow. He was the original founder, one of the original founders of the American Academy of Arts and Science. Pretty interesting stuff, right? A little bit more to go. I'm going to go with the rest of the states, and then I'm going to conclude with some commentary and 10 things you probably didn't know about the Declaration of Independence. But I want you to think about this in the break. Think about what we're living through right now. We're being censored by our government. We're not being represented fairly and equally by our government. You're actually being told you can't even, by the very people that say they're for diversity in the workplace and diversity of culture, they forbid diversity of discussion, diversity of debate, and diversity of ideas. They put it all on a skin or sexual flavors or identifications as to what you identify the day. That diversity is okay, but not the diversity of thought. So when we come back, we're going to keep on talking about this. Call your friends, tell them to tune in. Got a little more to cover, more to talk about. Be back right after this.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
If you were asked by someone to explain, how did the computers rig votes? How did the numbers change? Most people would never be able to, much less explain it or even understand it. Your eyes just glaze over. What we have built into our voting systems are opportunities to create issues. Let's look at this. You heard one government official right after the election say, it's paper, folks. You can't hack paper. Of course you can hack paper. You've been to a candy machine or, say, a car wash and put in a dollar bill, and it spits it back out because it's saying, this dollar bill's no good. That's the machine telling you, I can't take that piece of paper. I want a good piece of paper. Well, did you know our voting machines are not designed to do that? In fact, most people think that when they go in and vote, that you do the normal process. They hand you a piece of paper. It's the ballot. You walk over to a machine. It's called the ballot marking device. Now, the first thing you have to ask yourself, are you incapable of filling out a little tiny Ovid? Well, why do they do that? Because if that device can read a vote that's printed, can't you mass print votes and they'll be read? You have to understand how this works. And so when you go in and you mark your ballot, supposedly it marks your ballot and it hands it back. What do? You walk over to another person, you hand it to them, and they feed it into the scanner and they say, thank you, Mr. Pulitzer, you voted. No, you didn't vote. You thought you voted. All you did was mark a piece of paper with what you wanted to vote, but your vote didn't count then. Most people don't understand anywhere in that process, from the fobs to the transfers to the tally. What's a tally? It's just the calculator that counts them. Why is all of that hidden? Why doesn't your vote count the moment you cast it? And it's because these systems are designed specifically to break apart the process and put a human in between it. Now, you think it's machine driven. So let's give an example. All through the day, these ballots are being fed in, and they go to a fob, which most people don't know about that. Same thing you use on your desktop, just a little USB fob. What happens to that fob? Well, that fob is actually given to someone who then takes it to another location to tally it. Who is that person? How are they vetted? People will always create opportunity if they're there to do it. You can't swear that somebody's not nefarious. That fob just being handled by a human creates an opportunity to game the system.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
We're talking about the Declaration of Independence. What the 56 men that signed that document, all of them knew they were men. They weren't confused. All of them knew that they needed to do something to protect themselves from tyranny. They needed to take extraordinary measures, and they did that with pen and paper first. And as I've always said, it was the Declaration of Independence that founded our great nation. And I'll be damned if something as simple to manage as a ballot, a piece of paper, is going to undo this country. They knew what was at stake. A lot of patriots are going through it right now. You're being censored. You're being cut off. You're not being censored because you're off target. You're being censored because you're on target. Because the fact of the matter is, in any media, social media too, if you don't matter, well, then you just don't fucking matter, and they won't pay attention to you. When you get censored, it is because they believe you matter. And they're afraid of you opening the eyes of other people. It's history repeating itself. Let's go on to New Hampshire. Josiah Bartlett. Josiah Bartlett served in Congress until 1779. He was worn out. The stress was too much for him. He decided not to be reelected because of fatigue. Then there was Matthew Thornton. He was born in 1714, died in 1803. Matthew Thornton served as Speaker of the New Hampshire House of Representatives, was an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court, was elected to the Continental Congress in 1776, and he was one of the six members who signed the Declaration of Independence after it was adopted by the Continental Congress. New Hampshire, having their own issues, where the very people that they have elected in office say, you don't tell us what to do. We tell you. These are the men that basically said that's bad government 245 years ago. And in New Hampshire, your board of selectmen need to be deselected because they think they don't answer to you. William Whipple would whip their ass if he was around. Who's William Whipple? Well, he was born in 1730, died in 1785. He was a former sea captain who commanded troops during the Revolutionary War and was a member of the Continental Congress from 1776 to 1779. Those are your New Hampshire true patriots that signed the Declaration of Independence. We're going to move on to New Jersey. Isn't it funny how all these states that fought for our freedom and independence are almost exclusively extreme liberal Democrat strongholds? Why is that? Because this has been a long-term play to undo the most important event in history in modern times, the founding of America, to undo it. And it's been undone and undone and undone, started with education. Then it went into political office. Let's go to New Jersey. Abraham Clark, born in 1726, died in 1794. Abraham Clark was a farmer, a surveyor, and a politician who spent most of his life in public service. He was a member of the New Jersey State Legislature. He spent his, should we say, his state, he represented the state at the Annapolis Convention in 1776. He was actually another one that was opposed to the Constitution until it incorporated a Bill of Rights. Then there was John Hart, born in 1711, died in 1719. John became Speaker of the Lower House of New Jersey State Legislature. His property was destroyed by the British during the Revolutionary War. His wife died 3 months after the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. And during the ravaging of his home, he had to hide out in the Sauerland Mountains in exile. He had to live in the mountains. They took over everything he had. You've seen that going on in the UK. Police not wanting to enforce anything because they don't want to be considered racist if a Muslim comes in illegally to the country and decides to take over a house and throw out the family. It's going on. Read about it. Then there's Francis Hopkinson, born in 1737, died in 1791. Francis was a judge, a lawyer by profession, but he was also a musician, a poet, and an artist. When the Revolutionary War was over, he became one of the most respected writers in our great country. Then there was Richard Stockton, born in 1730, died in 1781. Richard Stockton was trained to be a lawyer. He graduated from the College of New Jersey. He was elected to the Continental Congress in 1776. He was the first of the New Jersey delegation to sign the Declaration of Independence. And in November of 1776, he was captured by the British. He was kept, eventually released later in the year in 1777, but in very, very poor physical condition. The British destroyed his home in Morven, and he died in 1781, shortly thereafter, at the young age of 50 years old. Mainly because how he's treated as a prisoner of war. John Wetherspoon was born in 1723, died in 1794. John Wetherspoon was the only active clergyman. Now, there was one that was trained as a minister. He was an active clergyman. Among the signers of the Declaration of Independence, he was elected to Continental Congress in 1776 through 1782, elected to the state legislature in New Jersey, 1783 through 1789. And he was the president of the College of New Jersey from 1768 to 1792. His later years were spent with a great deal of time trying to rebuild the College of New Jersey. You know it as Princeton. That's where it is. Again, these institutions have been taken over. What were extremely patriotic, dedicated their lives to founding this great country, have now been completely undone. Let's go to New York. William Floyd, born in 1734, died in 1821. William Floyd had his estate in New York destroyed by the British, because he signed this, and the Loyalist during the Revolutionary War. The Loyalists, the outspoken ones, were like Antifa today. They'd out you, burn your shit, take it from you, just because they didn't like how you thought. Now, he was a member of the United States Congress from 1789 to 1791 and was the presidential elector from New York 4 times. Then there was Francis Lewis, born in 1713, died in 1802. Francis Lewis was one who truly felt probably some of the most tragedy of the Revolutionary War. His wife died, kind of an indirect result of being imprisoned by the British. He lost all of his property on Long Island, New York during the war. And then when his wife died, he left Congress and just abandoned politics and kind of drifted on into history. but he put his life and signature on the line to make this great country be founded. Then there's Philip Livingston. Born in 1716, died in 1778, Philip Livingston was not in Philadelphia to vote on the revolution or resolution for independence, but he did sign the actual physical Declaration of Independence on August 2nd, 1776. During the Revolutionary War, the British used his house as a Navy hospital and barracks for the troops. He was the third signer of the Declaration of Independence to die after Morton of Pennsylvania and Button of Gwinnett. He was the third to pass away during that time. Lewis Morris was born in 1726, died in 1798. Lewis Morris was a delegate to the Continental Congress from 1775 to 1777 during the Revolutionary War. Morris was a brigadier general in the New York State Militia, and all three of his sons served directly under General George Washington. Let's bounce to North Carolina. North Carolina was John Hughes, H-E-W-S, Hughes. 1730 to 1779, John was a merchant who was one of the most conservative signers of the Declaration of Independence. He was a graduate of Princeton College, and he, along with John Adams, helped establish the Continental Navy. William Hooper, 1742, died in 1790. William Hooper was a graduate of Harvard College, another guy, and was highly successful both in law and politics. Now, because of his family issues and a situation and some financial difficulties, he resigned from Congress to return to North Carolina. And during the war, he was separated from his family for almost a year. But when he got back, all of his property was destroyed. Now, John Penn, born in 1740, died in 1788. John Penn was one of 16 signers of the Declaration of Independence who also signed the Articles of Confederation. He was a member of the Continental Congress 1775 through 77 and again 1779 through 80. Let's move on to Pennsylvania. Now, in Pennsylvania, George Clymer. Now, he was born in 1739, died in 1813. George Clymer had a great deal of financial talent, and he signed both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. As a result, his home was vandalized by the British in 1777 during the American Revolutionary War. He became a target. He became a target for wanting freedom. Then, of course, you have Benjamin Franklin. After signing the Declaration of Independence, you know, he was born in 1706, died in 1790, by the way. Benjamin Franklin helped to negotiate the Treaty of Alliance with France in 1778 and the Treaty of Paris, which ended the Revolutionary War in 1783. He was one of the framers of the Constitution and was known and is known as the sage of the Constitution. I'm not talking about the seasoning, although he did season it. I'm talking about his wisdom. He was elected the president of the Pennsylvania Society for promoting the abolition of slavery. I point that out because most of these men were against slavery. You get taught something completely different. Slavery did go on, but many of these men recognized it must be done away with. And even though they owned land and had wealth, they were doing away with it, or they didn't have slaves. They actually had workers that were allowed to live there and work. They were not slaves. Not in the sense that you're told today, but that's revisionist history. Then there was Robert Morris, born in 1734, died in 1806. Robert Morris has been considered the financier of the Revolution and contributed his own money to help such causes as support the troops at Valley Forge and the battles of Trenton and Princeton. John Morton, born in 1725, died in 1777. John Morton was the first signer of the Declaration of Independence to die. He was one of nine signers from Pennsylvania. He was elected to the Second Continental Congress from 74 to 77, that's 1774 to 1777, and was the chairman of the committee that reported the Articles of Confederation. He contracted an inflammatory fever and died in Ridley Park, Delaware County, Pennsylvania. George Ross, born in 1730, died in 1779, right? Do the math, folks. Young guy, he's only 49 years old. George Ross was elected to the Second Continental Congress from 1776 to 1777. He was a colonel in the Continental Army in 1776. He was not a member of Congress when it voted for independence on July 2nd. That was the vote of 1776. But in his illness, he became ill. He was forced to resign in 1777. Benjamin Rush, born 1745, died in 1813. Benjamin Rush was elected to Continental Congress in 1776, appointed Surgeon General of the Middle Department of the Continental Army in 1777. He was part of a very unsuccessful plot to relieve General Washington of his military command. But he was a well-known doctor and medical instructor in the United States. But he didn't care for George Washington. And even in people fighting for the same causes, you can still have people that basically think they should be leading the show and want to undo those. And he basically didn't care much for George Washington. Then there's James Smith. He was born in 1719. Died in 1806. James Smith was elected Continental Congress on July 20th, 1776, after the votes had been taken for the resolution for the independence and the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. But he signed it. He was there. He goes down in history. There's George Taylor, born in 1716. 1781 was when he passed. George Taylor came to the colonies as an indentured servant. Just another name for a slave, indentured servitude. He rose from indentured servitude when he got to this country, got out of it, worked his way out of it, signed the Declaration of Independence, and to boot, he was the iron master at the Warwick Furnace and Coventry Forge. He was a member of the Continental Congress from 1775 to 1777. He returned to Pennsylvania, where he was elected to the new Supreme Executive Committee. It was only a short time. He had an illness and some financial difficulties, but his Durham furnace he built, rising from a slave, built his own, manufactured the ammunition for the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. James Wilson, now these are all guys from Pennsylvania, by the way. James Wilson, he was born in 1742, died in 1798. James Wilson was elected to Congress in 1775 through 1777. Then again in 1785 through 1787, right? Chosen to be one of the directors of the Bank of North America, was a member of the Continental Convention in 1787, was appointed by George Washington to be an Associate Justice of the Supreme Court from 1789 to 1798, and he experienced, interesting enough, because of the oppression against him, he experienced an incredible financial difficulty, which actually had him spending time in debtor's prison. At the same time, he was serving on the Supreme Court. South Carolina, Thomas Hayward Jr., 1746-1809. Thomas Hayward was a planter and a lawyer and was one of the signers, from South Carolina. He was captured and imprisoned by the British. The British destroyed his home, which is called Whitehall, and he was held prisoner until 1781. That's how long he was held. Thomas Lynch, South Carolina, born 1749, passed in 1779, 30 years old. Thomas Lynch Jr. was an aristocrat planter who was the youngest signer of the Declaration of Independence. He died at 30. He was a trained lawyer, graduated from Cambridge University in England, came here and fought against England to have freedom. Think about what Cambridge turns out. He was elected to the Second Continental Congress to carry on the duties of his ill father, which was Thomas Lynch Sr. They were the only father and son to serve concurrently in the Continental Congress. In 1779, he and his wife were en route to France, and their ship was lost at sea. Then there's Arthur Middleton, 1742, 1787, was when he died. Arthur Middleton was chosen to replace his conservative father in the Continental Congress in 1776, but failed to attend the sessions. He just didn't kind of show up. He was captured by the British and was held captive for 1 year in St. Augustine, Florida. During the time of his incarceration, the British made sure to destroy his property. Edward Rutledge, 1749, died in 1800. Edward Rutledge was elected to Continental Congress from 1774 through 76, and then again in 79. He was the youngest of the signers period of the Declaration of Independence. During the Revolutionary War, Rutledge was a military captain. By the way, they were almost the same ages. Military captain involved in the campaigns at Port Royal Island in Charleston, South Carolina. He was captured by the British in 1780, held prisoner till 1781. Rhode Island. William Ellery, born in 1727, died in 1820. William Ellery served with distinction in the Congress of the Confederation until in 1786, when he accepted the post of Commissioner of Continental Loan Office of Rhode Island. The British once again destroyed his home during the American Revolution. He was able to rebound from it and rebuild his fortune. Stephen Tompkins, 1707 to 1785. Stephen Tompkins was the second oldest signer of the Declaration of Independence, next to Benjamin Franklin. He served on the committee that was responsible for creation of the Articles of Confederation. Virginia. Carter Braxton, 1736, died in 1797. Carter Braxton was elected to Virginia State Legislature after signing the Declaration of Independence. He served on the Governor's Executive Council. The American Revolutionary War caused him great hardship. He lost everything. He died in financial ruins later in Richmond, Virginia. Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson was the chief author of the Declaration of Independence. He was a member of the Virginia House of Delegates from 1776 to 1779, elected governor of Virginia in 1779 and 1780. He was the envoy to France in 1784, minister to the French court in 1785, United States Secretary of State from 1789 to 1793, vice president of the United States from 1791 to 1801, president of the United States from 1801 to 1809, and he established the University of Virginia in 1810. He was considered to be the most brilliant man of his time. Francis Lightfoot Lee. Born in 1734, died in 1797. Francis Lightfoot Lee was the younger of brother Richard Henry Lee. He signed both the Declaration of Independence, Article of Confederation, as well as serving on both the military and marine committees during his time in Congress. His brother, Richard Henry Lee, born in 1732, died in 1794. Richard Henry Lee introduced the Resolution for Independence to the Second Continental Congress in June 1776. And what's interesting is he was initially another one that was opposed to the Constitution because he wanted to make sure it had a Bill of Rights. Thomas Nelson Jr., 1738, 1789. Thomas Nelson Jr. had his congressional career shortened because of health problems, although he did serve as the commanding general of Lower Virginia militia during the Revolutionary War. And then the final one, George Wythe, W-Y-T-H-E, born in 1726, died in 1806. George Wythe was more well known as being a classical scholar who taught. Ready for this? He was the teacher of Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, John Marshall, and Henry Clay. He was elected to the Continental Congress in 1775 through 1776. He was also appointed the first chair of law at the College of William and Mary. He died in 1806 after being poisoned. Isn't it funny how many of these men's legacy were great institutions, the very institutions today that shun anything conservative? Absolutely anything conservative, they shun it. When we come back, I'm going to do the last segment. I'm going to give you a few little parting comments, 10 facts you probably didn't know about the Declaration of Independence. But I think it's very funny 245 years ago, men and women were fighting for freedom from tyranny. Their rights were being taken away. They were not represented well by their government, really didn't have a say. The government forced stuff on them. And here we are today, celebrating what is absolutely my most favorite holiday, 4th of July. And now we have teachers, professors, students, corporations that are ashamed of flags hanging out. Ashamed. Our own government didn't support the fireworks in Dakota. Can you imagine that? Our own government even said just happy holiday or have a great long weekend instead of the celebration of our nation. How horrible is that? My closing comments, 10 facts you need to know right after this.
They use their media to assassinate real news. They use their schools to teach children that their president is another Hitler. They use their movie stars and singers and comedy shows and award shows to repeat their narrative over and over again. And then they use their ex-president to endorse the resistance, all to make them march, make them protest, make them scream racism and sexism and xenophobia and homophobia, to smash windows, burn cars, shut down interstates and airports, bully and terrorize the law-abiding, until the only option left is for the police to do their jobs and stop the madness. And when that happens, they'll use it as an excuse for their outrage. The only way we stop this, the only way we save our country and our freedom, is to fight this violence of lies with the clenched fist of truth. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
So here's what most people don't know about these voting machines. All of them have variations, but let me ask you a question. Most of us have used a vending machine or, say, a car wash. We take out our dollar bill, we put it into the machine, but if the bill's bad, what happened? It spits it back out to you. So what do? You try to straighten out the bill or find another bill till you get one that works. Did you know in these so-called voting machines that when it takes that ballot in, if something's wrong with it, you don't get notified? It's actually set over into another electronic bin for somebody else to decide what did you intend to vote. I say these systems are not set up, should we say, for security. I think they're set up to maximize opportunity. And sometimes if you know how to use those opportunities, you can game the system. Let me give you an example. Let's say all of these 160 million votes were dollar bills. We'd have $160 million sitting out in front of us. As I said, it's all yours, absolutely guaranteed, $160 million. And you say, okay, I want to count it, but we only pull out a few bills and say, see these 10s, see these 20s. You can't see it all. You can only see a little bit. Are you going to believe that that's actually yours? Not at all. In all systems, whether it be you're going to do a public company or you're going to be audited by a bank, they ask you and your accounts to look at everything down to the penny. Why don't we do this in our election systems? And it's because the auditing is set up not to find the truth. Let me give you an example. Follow with me here. If you look at my blocks that I've set out on the table, these represent boxes of ballots. Now, if you were dealing with a state, let's say like Georgia, you would have 2,300 locations of boxes with multiple boxes in every location. Now, each of these boxes in this scenario have ballots in them. And so let's say, okay, we're going to do a random audit. Let's look at a few percent of them. So you're going to look at them. Let's say we're going to take this one and let's take this one over here. And here you go. We're going to keep these over here. And we're taking almost all of them and we're going to do an audit. Here you go. And we run those and we never find anything. Do you know why that happens? It's because these boxes are coded. And if you look at the numbers on the outside, what I did in that little smoke and mirrors right there is I pulled the ones that are the odd numbers. These are the positive numbers. What I'm doing, if I'm gaming the system, I know I'm not going to find errors in the odd boxes, I will in the even boxes. And so what they do is they do this shell game of partial audits, and that's why every time it happens, you find out, well, one woman signed for a husband, and that's the only discrepancy we found. Partial audits do not work. That is how the system is rigged to never give an answer and to never find a solution.
What kind of government cares more about appeasing Islamic terrorists than defending the constitutional rights of its citizens? A government that would disarm us during the age of terror. Nothing would make us more vulnerable to generations of suffering and slaughter than the destruction of our Second Amendment. But many of our politicians, aided by a relentless media, are launching that attack themselves. They dream of joining the rest of the disarmed peoples of the world, entrusting our survival to the mercy of monsters. The greatest damage the terrorists could ever inflict upon us is disarmament at the hands of the political elites. But we will never offer our right to survive as a fool's ransom to the world's killers. Our freedom is what they fear most. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
You know, those words are very true. Our freedom is what they fear most. Our freedom is what they work very hard to take away. 2020 and into 2021, we've seen our freedoms disappear. This is history repeating itself. I use the NRA commercials because one of our most important constitutional rights, the Second Amendment, is under attack. If you watch any countries, when they give up their right to bear arms, everything changes in their system. Taxes go through the roof. People are suppressed. They don't have a say and they're beat down. They certainly don't have a great culture to create wealth among themselves. You don't have somebody rise from the middle class, or like myself, that was born to a prostitute mother who was addicted to heroin, an alcoholic, and I lost my mother to AIDS. I came from nothing and created great things. In these systems where get taken over, that is not allowable. It stays all within the elite and ruling class. Don't believe me? Ask the Mark Zuckerberg of Venezuela. Do you know his story? Have you ever heard the story about Mark Zuckerberg and his incredible wealth, meaning the Mark Zuckerberg of Venezuela, and the incredible wealth he created in Venezuela? Let me tell you this story, because it's an amazing story of incredible wealth and the government taking it away. Oh, wait a minute. Venezuela doesn't allow that. There never was a Mark Zuckerberg of Venezuela. And that's the point of the story. You think it's simple. People love this idea of free checks and nursing off the tit till they realize that opportunity to create great things and your own wealth's gone and you're nothing more than a battery unit like in the Matrix. It's true. These 56 men that I've been talking about today paid the ultimate price, putting their name on the line, fighting for this country. And you've enjoyed its freedoms and opportunity. We are the land of the free, and it's why, and our opportunities, we have 188 countries that break into our borders to get here. We only see United States media that is the problem, the enemy. Horribly, it's disgusting. The rest of the world is fearful for us because they know if we go down, they go down. And that's just the truth. But so few people study history, they have no idea what we went through. I talked about a discussion I had the other day with a young person. I had to write something down on a return. I put it all down on the receipt. The person couldn't read cursive. And it's not just because I have shitty handwriting, couldn't read cursive at all. And I said, really? You can't read cursive? And I realized, very sobering, if you can't read cursive, and they don't teach it in school anymore, you have no idea how to read the original Declaration of Independence. And if you can't read the original documents, biblical or otherwise, you really don't know when the changes occur. You don't know if they've been changed because you can't go back to the source. And if you stop teaching history and civics in schools, you get what we get today. People are ignorant, have no idea, and they don't understand their own bullshit protest where they're being hijacked and manipulated as meat puppets. Meat puppets, right up the kahoo, being used as meat puppets for the system. And they have no idea because they don't know anything about history, and our school systems stop teaching history. And that's why I wanted to do this, to let you know about history. These gentlemen paid an incredible price. You know, the five signers were captured by the British as traitors, and they were tortured. Some of them died in progress. Some of them died afterwards, all because of that torturing. 12 had their homes raided and burned. 2 lost their sons in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds and hardships during the Revolutionary War. 26 lost everything. They signed, they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and for this sacred honor, finding this country. They were regular men like all of us. Farmers, growers, local leaders, lawyers. It doesn't take elites. The elites are what have undone this. The elite is what they were fighting against. Then a learned man or woman studied the foundations, true foundations of the world in Christian, Judeo-Christian beliefs. They didn't. Society wasn't a variable. It wasn't there's 62 sexes. These universities, you hear about these men founding and supporting. When they got away from God, they became cesspools. When they take God out of everything, society goes down. When you can transition from male to female, society becomes variable. And the reality is society, just like ethics, most importantly, it's ethics and its morals, are not variable. They're fixed. And if you can lead a population to believe it's variable and everything's variable, you can move them along a line to eradicate their beliefs. And that's what's happened in our country. Here's 10 facts you probably didn't know about the Declaration of Independence. Here we are on July 4th celebrating the birthday of the United States of America. But it's actually July 2nd. Little technicality. Some people get nitpicky over it, like that invalidates it, but it doesn't. Officially, the Continental Congress declared its freedom from the British on July 2nd, 1776. That's when it approved the resolution and delegates from New York were permitted to make it a unanimous vote. John Adams thought July 2nd should be marked as a national holiday for years to come. Well, where in the hell did July 4th come from? Well, after voting on independence, the Continental Congress needed to finalize the document and explaining the move to the public, right? It had been proposed in draft form by the Committee of Five, John Adams, Roger Sherman, Roger Livingston, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and it took 2 days for the Congress to agree on the edits. For the edits, for the people, etc. There you go. That's how we get July 4th. 6 people who signed the Declaration of Independence also signed our incredible Constitution that our current government's trying to overturn. Franklin was among the handful who signed both historical documents, including George Reed, Roger Sherman, Robert Morris, George Clymer, and James Wilson. But they didn't sign the Declaration of Independence on July 4th. Once the Congress approved the actual Declaration of Independence document on July 4th, it was ordered to be sent to a printer by the name of John Dunlap. About 200 copies of the Dunlap broadside were printed, and that had John Hancock's name printed at the bottom. Today, there were supposedly 26 copies that remain. You know about the person that stumbled onto one at a flea market, right? The Dunlap broadside at a flea market. Somebody actually found one at a flea market, an original one, because there's multiple originals. That happened in 1989 in Adamstown, Pennsylvania. It was tucked behind an old picture in a frame. The buyer bought it for $4. and behind it, he found one of these original broadsides. It was bought by television producer Norman Lear, who paid $8.1 million for it. So when was it actually signed? Most of the members of the Continental Congress signed a version of the Declaration of Independence in early August 1776 in Philadelphia. The names of the signers were released publicly in early 1777. So the famous painting showing the July 4th is an amalgam of the times it was done, not the literal time it was done. It was the memorialization moment, but they were all not together, putting them all together. That's the one you've seen. Now, there's two things. There's the Declaration and Independence Day. They've kind of become together. Historian Pauline Mayer said in her 1997 book that the Declaration that no member of Congress called in early July 77, they didn't call that. And it was almost a year before they all kind of came in that they literally officially declared their freedom. It had to be all and over, and they declared. So that's the declaration part of it. And then they finally remembered when it actually, the documents and stuff were drafted. And then, of course, it became, although it was the third, and then on to the fourth, it became how we got the fourth, right? You have to remember times were different then. You didn't do it instantly. You had to remember what it took. Sometimes it took a month for a letter to go 100 miles. That's the way it was. Now, the Declaration of Independence had the same problem then that it has now. It suffered from disrespect. The Declaration of Independence and its signing and the celebration of it became a feud between the Federalist and the Republicans. Federalist was John Adams, and the Republicans were Thomas Jefferson. And so the Declaration and its anniversary weren't actually a celebration until the Federalists that were against it kind of faded out of the political scene completely, and that was 1812. So it wasn't immediately celebrated. And did you know that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution was hidden during World War II? Yes, it was. Both documents were packed up about 2 weeks after Pearl Harbor, and it was given a military escort to Fort Knox in Kentucky, to where it remained until 1944. And last, a little bit of trivia for the treasure hunter and me, failed treasure hunter, according to mainstream media. Anyway, in the movie National Treasure, you kind of saw that they found a secret coded message on the back of the Declaration of Independence, right? Fact or fiction? Well, that was a key plot in the movie, was that decoding on the back of the Declaration of Independence. But there is a code on the back of the Declaration of Independence. There is something on the back of it. And it's not as dramatic as the movie. But it actually says on the back, original Declaration of Independence dated July 4th, 1776. Somebody labeled it when it was put in storage to protect it. So it does have something on the back. What's the point of all this? The point of all this is we have forgotten. Where all of this started and where it came from. We never think we're going to be the ones alive when we see our nation being undone. It is not over by any stretch of the imagination. But if you have mainstream media on and you're reading newspaper, your brain's being poisoned. Period. Your brain is being poisoned. This is a dual fight. This is a fight for the survival of our country. This is also a fight between good and evil. If you don't believe me, look at what's going on. We now say men can transition to women. Women can transition to men. They're trying to enact laws to be able to have sex with children down to the age of six. Sometimes I think, and I don't begrudge anybody their sexuality, it shouldn't be a crime, but you also shouldn't be perpetrating kids. But I have to imagine, if you were just to sit back and watch our broadcast always look at Yahoo News headlines and some of these headlines and stuff going on, and it's about transitioning genders and all this other stuff and hating your country. We just had an Olympian do it. I just kind of imagine it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. It's like in your face, screw you, hump an animal, have a kid, hey, have a buffet, have whatever you want. And I just don't get it. And I'm not a bigot against somebody's sexuality. I just don't believe that's who you are or what you stand for. I think if you're gay and all you stand for is being gay, something's wrong. You're not a well-rounded individual. Just like I think if you're, a hater of America, and that's all you stand for, you're not well-rounded. You just don't have everything. You've latched onto one thing. It's not your identity. But part of these labels have made these things your identity, people's identities. And our kids think that's what it is, right? Kids coming out as transgendered. I don't get it. But this is the fight for our country. It is the fight for everything we believe in. One side of the equation poisons minds and makes you believe everything is variable. And if you don't like it, then they just tell you you're a conspiracist. They shut you down. They take your possessions. They've already incarcerated people, but let the very people go that were actually bad actors. They incarcerated the people that they could associate with somebody else. It's nuts. And yes, I saw that one too, Joe, where the lefties were talking about take your kids to the gay pride parade, and they endorsed your kids should be able to see kink in the streets because that's just the way it is. I do believe they're trying to destroy everything that's decent, and I'm no straight line walker. It's horrible going on out there. And so what you have to do is you have to basically fight to share better content. That's the point. You have to fight to share better content and get it out. Download it. Learn how to download something from somebody's channel. Download mine. Put it on your computer. Share it out. Other way, they can't suppress us all. But this is the time when everybody's needed to understand what's going on, the price we may very well pay if we don't fight with words and with paper right now with laws and stand up and be heard. I am not talking about riots. I'm not talking about guns. I'm talking the civil way to do it. We outnumber them. You have to be heard. You have to be vocal about it. Period. Don't worry about being canceled. They want to cancel you anyway. So go for it. Get as much as you can out there before you cancel you. And even if they cancel, you'll come back. I love you all. I love this nation. It is not over. I am not depressed. I'm upset. But don't think I'm depressed or down. I know more than they do. And what I know is I know this country's coming back to its greatness, and our greatness will be ever even more grateful and great and wonderful and powerful than you can ever imagine. Love you all. Have a great 4th of July. Please share this broadcast. Thank you.
Wow, that went by fast.
Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer live. And as Jovan says, if you can dream it, you can do it. Speaking of doing it, let's do this again next time. Find Jovan on all social media.
Or search hashtag Jovan Hutton-Pulitzer.
Or by visiting jovanhuttonpulitzer.org.
Until next time.